Yo, what's up? It's your boy Dan. I'm in River North, most hardcore place in Chicago, and you're listening to Outside the Loop Radio, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you very much, Dan. I can tell that you were out in River North celebrating New Year's this week. Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. This is show number 1003. And what we do here on the program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Bob Ferguson is our engineer on duty today in the WGN radio studio. And Happy New Year. Here we go, 2026. I am excited to be here, and on the show today, we're kind of taking a look back on the year that was 2025, some of the highlights here on Outside the Loop. And speaking of highlights, I've got my sons, 10-year-old Mikey, 8-year-old Joey here with me today. Guys, how are you?
Good.
I'm fine.
Okay, all business, Mikey. All right, looking back at 2025... Mikey, what was your favorite thing about 2025?
Probably my instrument recital at the middle school.
And what do you play?
Viola.
You play viola. You crushed it the entire concert. 8 minutes long, man. Shredding. Nice job.
Thank you.
And Joey, what about you?
When I won my baseball championship.
That was awesome. I was there for that. And you got all the three outs in the last inning, right?
Yeah.
You were playing first base?
Yeah.
Is that what you want to do professionally?
Maybe.
Okay, buy mom and dad a big house?
Sure.
Okay, I think we're good. Well, hey, 2025, a great year. I'm happy that I could be here with you on this show. And we'll take a look back at 2025 on the big program today. We're taking a look back on some segments from the year that was 2025. So if we journey back to OTL number 953 from January of 2025, so almost exactly a year ago, we find a conversation I had with Adam Jacobs, also known as Chicago's taping guy. He has recorded thousands of local shows, like 30,000 separate musical performances over the years, and he's on a mission to put these shows online so we can enjoy the music and a bit of local history. In this clip, I start by asking him why he's recording these shows. Check it out.
Well, I was recording concerts off of the radio, like WXRT used to play concerts. They still do.
Yeah.
On Sunday nights or Saturday nights, King Biscuit Flower Hour, the Unconcert, whatever. I used to tape those off the radio, and I met a very nice fellow who didn't live far from me in Evanston, named Steve Litton, who was a bit older than I am, and he told me that people walk into concerts with tape recorders, and you can tape the concert you go to. So I thought, wow, that's a great idea. So that's what I started doing.
This is back in the 80s too. And so, I mean, were they like today you go to a show and you depending on the show, I mean, if it's a bigger, I don't know, arena
it's
show.
It's miserable today. The security's miserable today.
Right.
No, there were security issues in for someone who was trying to tape a show without permission in the 80s. There's no doubt about that. The bigger the venue, the more difficult it was. But on the other hand, nothing like today. I imagine if I wanted to bring something in surreptitiously today, I might be able to do it, but it was definitely different back then. But there wasn't really an issue since most of the concerts I was going to were at small venues. And so there was no need to like hide anything coming in the door because you weren't checked. Like
right.
You're not checked at bars today. You're not checked. You're not checked at a lot of small places. And I appreciate that. And even though I'm not bringing in any contraband, I feel like that's a trust between the venue and the audience. And the bigger place you go to, the less trust they have in you. So yeah, it was easier back then, but also what I was doing was was going to concerts where it really didn't matter whether you had a tape recorder or not, because people didn't care or even imagine that someone even cared about making a recording.
Right. And the musicians themselves, I mean, I know that you've even given some of these musicians the tapes that you've made of the recordings of their shows. So for the most part, I mean, these bands, and by the way, again, we'll link up to the website here through the Internet Archive at archive.org. But your database here is growing as you're digitizing more of these tapes so we can all have access to them. But the bands, I would imagine, especially the smaller local bands, were like, "Yeah, that's cool. I appreciate you taping it, and you know, put it somewhere. Give it to someone."
Yeah, yeah, they were many of them, not all of them, of course, but many of them certainly did appreciate what I did very much, and continue to do so to this day. But it wasn't 100%. There were bands out there who were very, very protective of their music, even though no one remembers who they are.
There you go.
No, it's a fact. It's a
yeah.
fact.
Yeah. So in terms of how you were doing this kind of recording, as I understand it, you were out in the audience. Were you standing there with a microphone? Were you getting a feed, an audio feed from the soundboard? What was this like?
There are at many small venues around Chicago over the past few decades, which means not the entire time I was doing it, but a majority of the time I was doing it, I would combine microphones, a stereo pair, with what was coming out of the soundboard, especially if it were a quieter show or a show that was more crowded or something like that. Because just standing there with microphones is something that's very, very hard to do. And I have friends who do it, still do it today, and I applaud them for it. But I can't do that. It takes far too much away from the actual experience that you're in to have to deal with holding a recorder and microphones while that experience is happening. So my goal was to be able to set microphones up if I'm just doing a microphone recording and be able to walk away if I need to use the toilet or whatever, or use microphones plus the soundboard feed, mix them together. Again, I can walk away if I need to, and I can enjoy the concert as it's happening. But if you're holding a microphone and a tape recorder, that's much harder to do.
Good to be back at the Lounge Hacks. Thanks, Sue, for having us again. Good to see our Chicago friends. We got our voices and we have a new album out. One, two, three, four.
One short week we shared the same carpool, hey, hey. And then I saw you today. Well, you're looking pretty special in your disco hat as you do your dirty laundry at the laundromat.
So are you still recording shows today? Like in 2025, are you still getting out there and doing these recordings?
No. I've not officially stopped. But I haven't made a recording in about a year and a half, and I don't have the drive to do so anymore. The unique quality of what I was doing has been tempered by the fact that everybody's got a recording studio in their pocket now. And so what I was doing was special at the time, but with today's technology, it no longer is. And that's not why I stopped. I stopped more because I wasn't getting what I needed out of what I was doing. It filled a void in my life for a very, very long time, but it no longer does. the need is no longer there to capture everything I witness.
So why did you then decide to digitize these? Because early on, we're talking about tape, actual physical tape, like cassettes. And then as time evolved and the technology evolved and got smaller, I know you were using some digital audio tape. But why did you decide to take your collection and make it all digital and make it so we can all get at it?
Well, tape doesn't last forever. Neither do many digital files. And if I didn't allow the collection to be digitized and available so that it isn't lost due to the medium it's on, then it was going to be lost. It may not be till after I die. It may have happened already. I don't know. You know, the condition of the tapes that I do break out and listen to that are very old from the 80s, they sound good. So that's a good sign. But like I say, they're not going to last forever. And I cannot do this job on my own by any stretch of the imagination. And I certainly can't hire people to do it either. So there weren't a lot of options for what to do, and the Internet Archive was very enthusiastic, so I gave them the opportunity to do this, and here we are.
And so the folks at the Internet Archive are helping you out. They're getting these tapes digitized and available for all of us to check out online. And how far along are you, or are they, at the Internet Archive into this process? Because you have so many shows, how long is this going to take?
I believe my contact at the archive was hoping to get this done in 5 years.
Wow.
They are hoping to get to the point where they're doing about 50 shows a day amongst all the people who are working on it. I believe that's the number. It sounded crazy to me, but I get it. You know, if I'm alone, if I'm doing it myself, I can do maybe 3 shows a day, maybe 4 shows a day. I've got other things to do in my life. And I'm sure all these people do too, but they're enthusiastic about working on this project. And potentially they could ramp it up to 50 shows digitized a day. And if that happens, then potentially the archive, or most of the archive, will find its way onto the Internet Archive in 5 or so years. But, you know, we'll see how that goes.
Right. And this database, essentially online now, your archive is growing digitally. So as every day passes, there are more shows that are being digitized and available publicly. What's amazing, yes, I think, as you go through these shows, and I'm just scrolling through, and I think I was at some of these shows, actually, which is kind of cool.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah. You know, I'm looking at like the track listing here, and sometimes you even have a poster from the show. So there's a lot of information. It's not just the audio files. You have tracked these, or someone has tracked these, and
they did that.
It's amazing how they've done all this.
Yeah. Well, they're into it, aren't they? It's awesome. I wish I could be them. I wish I could have the time to do exactly what they're doing, and God bless them for doing it. It's great that they're taking the time to find the flyers beyond asking me, because I've got a library full of paper material, but they're going online and they're finding some kind of graphic to put along with it, a set list if one is available, because many of my tapes don't have anything other than the venue and the date, and of course the band, and maybe a running time. And that's about it on the vast majority of the tapes.
When you take a step back here, Adam, and look at this collection,
yeah,
thousands of shows and years of your life, I mean, just the significance of this, it's music, you know, it's a variety of music. I mean, I look at it and I see, yeah, I love music. This is really cool to check out. I see a historical significance, a cultural significance. I'm wondering, what do you see the significance of this as, your collection, now that you're making public for all of us?
It is definitely both of those things. Absolutely. Historical and cultural. Absolutely. It For me personally, it's a bit of an audio diary. How many people can pull out a tape of where they were at any given night? That is an amazing thing to have. And I will have it at my fingertips once it's all up on the Internet Archive, as opposed to pulling out some tape.
And we will all have this archive at our fingertips, which is so cool. And this is through archive.org. And I will link up to the exact archive that is from Adam Jacobs that spans all these years. And it is growing every day. So we should keep
crazy,
going.
It
is crazy.
It's crazy for me to look and see what they have up there. Oh, they did this one. Oh, they did this one. Because the stuff that they're putting up right now is... I don't know what they're putting up. They have a variety of well over 1,000 shows right now. And I don't, there's no order. So it's as exciting for me as it is for you, because I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting. They put that one. Oh my goodness. I don't even remember who that band is or whatever, because of course I taped all the opening bands, because sometimes the opening band turns into your favorite band. So there's a lot of recordings I have of bands that I just don't remember at all. So that's kind of fun to kind of, you know, relive that.
Well, this is such a cool thing that you're doing. We should all check it out. We'll link up to it through our channels here on Outside the Loop. And Adam Jacobs, a local music fan, I would say a little bit of a historian in there, cultural for sure. Yeah. And you were the taping guy for so long. Hey, Adam, I really appreciate your time today. And congratulations on getting this out there for all of us. And thanks for all the work that you've done.
Well, thank you for having some interest in it.
We are taking a look back on 2025 on the program today, and one of the biggest local stories in 2025 was undoubtedly immigration. And Chicago saw an influx of immigrants to this area in the beginning of the year, as some states sent groups of migrants here against their will. Back in March, I spoke with Sandra Diaz. She's the co-founder of the locally based organization, the Center for Immigrant Progress. I should say that our conversation took place months before the ICE invasion of our area. And I started the interview by asking Sandra just how people in the immigrant community were feeling at the time. Check it out.
I think it's a similar sentiment as, I guess, a lot of the country's experiencing. I think adding on the immigrant experience is just like an added stressor beyond that. So thinking about the immigrant community right now, I think there are people who, you know, in general are feeling a lot of stress and anxiety and just uncertainty about the future and what that could look like for them and their loved ones and their community in general. Because when we say immigrant community, we don't just mean immigrants. We mean every other, you know, person that they touch and interact with and that, you know, make up a part of that community, which is not just immigrants, right? Like, we are a part of the fabric of this country and interact with so many different sectors and other communities. So I think there is like an overall sentiment of just uncertainty and of fear right now.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point about the interaction of this community, because you're right, it's, I think, very easy to talk about this group like it's just in a silo. And that's not necessarily true, because immigrants interact with all of us all the time, every day. And you're right, they are really integral in parts of these communities and really help make these communities go and function. So is there a sense that some of these folks, some of these people who are in this immigrant community, are they retrenching? Are they not going out as much? Are they just trying to stay to themselves? Are they kind of disconnecting? Or is there more of a push to try to still have that integration?
Yeah, I think it's a mix. I want to say that we've seen people who are fearful of even going out to organizations like ours and seeking resources or asking for information, which is part of the reason why we try and make sure that everything we do, there is an accessibility feature of like making sure it's online at least somewhere for people who are fearful of stepping out. But I also think there are people who have been sort of empowered to just be more vocal. And I notice especially in the children of immigrants, you know, some who are citizens and are seeing the impact and how it's affecting their parents or loved ones. Also, I've seen this with a lot of educators when they've seen, you know, the effects that this can have, the fear can have on the children in schools, or, you know, hearing about the fear that the parents have as well. So I've seen, you know, leaders come up and feel like there is a need for them to advocate for those who may be fearful of speaking out in these times. So I think there's kind of a mix happening, but I do think that organizations like ours are doing a good job at making sure that we still keep our communities informed and those resources accessible to them, even if they're not comfortable, you know, stepping out as much as they used to.
Yeah, it's important to reach folks where they're at. You're absolutely right. And so in terms of the kinds of services that you do provide at the Center for Immigrant Progress, can you tell us about that? How do you go about the work? What does that look like practically?
Yeah, I think initially it's a lot of, you know, just those interactions with people, asking how they're doing, checking in. I think it's really beneficial to the work we do that, you know, we're an organization that was founded by immigrants and daughters of immigrants. So also the people, our team also have their own, you know, connections to the immigrant experience. So we have our own understanding of what is needed in within our community. And, you know, being able to interact with our community is also what informs what we do. So we realize that, you know, one of the most important things right now is making sure people have the right information from trusted sources. So we've seen a lot of like Know Your Rights presentations popping up. I think something that we've decided to do on top of just making sure people know what their rights are in the country, regardless of what their immigration status may be, is also making sure that there's a focus on creating community spaces, whether it's virtual or in person, and, you know, centering our community and our individual well-being, and being able to provide that space where we can sort of have just connection and make sure that, you know, we realize that we're not alone in this. A lot of people are feeling stressed right now. A lot of people are fearful, but we have each other, we have our community, and we try and create these spaces where we can kind of just like celebrate the joys, support each other, and just have that space, that safe space to support each other. Like I said, we try and keep the community informed, but not overwhelmed, because we know there's a lot going on. So we have our monthly newsletter where we try and inform people of everything that is going on and how it's going to be affecting them. But also on social media, I think it's been a really useful tool, especially recently, to make sure people know how to decipher, you know, what's factual and what's not, and how it could affect them or not. We also have a podcast where we try and inform people about, you know, all of the policies that may be affecting them, but also sharing in the stories of immigrants, so people can also, you know, get a look at what the experience is like, and also what immigrants look like. You know, we, like I mentioned, we are in all parts of our communities, in all parts of the country, and we are embedded into the fabric of this country. So making sure people know, you know, the very diverse stories that we have to share, and what makes us beyond just, you know, the label, you know, what makes us human, and getting that look into our lives as well. And then we also provide certain resources. We have scholarships for undocumented students and people who may need to renew their work permits. So making sure that there's not a financial barrier to have those things. And then also we have a leadership program, and this one, I believe, will be starting in April. So we just want to make sure that you know, the people who are looking to get involved in some way and you know, do their part, have guidance or support on how to do that and what that could look like. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be in the nonprofit sector, or, you know, it could be in any place, any career, how to be a support for our communities. And then lastly, we just try and make sure that we collaborate with other orgs that are also getting active right now, other groups that are looking to support our communities, and just making sure that we're collaborating and sharing resources and keeping everyone well-informed.
And this is personal for you. I mean, you are a DACA recipient. You came to the U.S. when you were just 5 years old. So, you know, here you are, co-founder of the Center for Immigrant Progress. But I would just have to imagine this is a very deeply personal thing that you are working on here.
Yes, it is. And I mean, the reason I got involved was because I realized that there were people making decisions that were impacting my life. And I couldn't do anything or say anything, or, you know, I felt like I had no control. So I felt that very personally. I think it was around 2017 when DACA was rescinded for the first time under the first Trump administration, that I think I that's when I realized I should do something. You know, I should try and at least share my story, make sure people know that this is impacting real people, at least. And eventually it led to me getting involved with local organizations and eventually met the ladies that helped create the Center for Immigrant Progress. And we all have that connection to the immigrant community and our own immigrant experiences. And I think it all stemmed from what we experienced, but also what we saw our parents experiencing, you know, people who, you know, come to this country and work hard and do everything they can to give their children the best life that they can, sometimes putting their needs aside to do so, their health aside to do so. And it's really disheartening to see how they are still treated as like second class citizens in this country. And so it's very personal. And I'm glad that I'm able to support my community in this way.
Well, you're doing some really powerful work, important work, and good luck with everything going forward. The website, centerforimmigrantprogress.org. And Sandra Diaz is the co-founder and board member at the Center for Immigrant Progress based in Lake County. Hey, Sandra, I really appreciate the time today. Again, good luck. Hang in there, and let's hope for a better tomorrow.
Thank you. Let's hope so. Thank you so much for the time.
Okay, I'm a coffee guy and a tea guy. Both things can be true. I think coffee gets the lion's share of the spotlight these days, but tea can be a relaxing treat for all of us. Since we're taking a look back on 2025 on the show this week, let's go back to OTL number 982 from August of 2025 and hear part of my conversation with Max Blessin. He's the founder of Joy Tea. That's a new company based in the Oak Park and River Forest area. I caught up with him as he was selling tea in his mobile tea trailer. Check it out. Coming into the trailer.
Hello. You want to try the milk tea? So it's less sweet, more focused on the tea flavor. We got a little interview going on here. This is...
Oh, I'm sorry. You're doing...
The cars are driving by us here on Lake Street and Keystone and River Forest, right outside of Keystone Park. And it's a nice day to have some tea. I'm just going to sip this. Oh my God, that's good. I'm here at Joy Tea with CEO and founder Max Blessin. This is a trailer. So we're literally in your trailer here, Max.
headquarters.
Your headquarters, which is mobile, which I think is pretty cool. We're on Lake Street, so you're going to hear those cars whizzing by. Thanks for doing this today. Tell us Joy Tea here. So I'm drinking this tea, and by the way, this is really, really good. What am I drinking here? What is this?
So what you're drinking is a 7-time scented jasmine green tea. It's one of the rarest teas on earth. It's made with over 40,000 freshly picked jasmine flowers. It takes about 500 hours to make. And what we did with that tea is we mixed it with some ruby red grapefruit to give you a citrusy, slightly tart, and super refreshing summer drink.
It is, I'm serious, it is so good. It's very refreshing and not overpowering, which I think is really nice. So, okay, Joy Tea, this is your business here. Like I said, this is a trailer. It's this very nice trailer that's on a hitch to a car. So you're mobile, you're in the Oak Park and River Forest area. Tell us about this business. What are you doing here? Why did you start it?
Yeah, so Joy Tea is... We make modern, fun, healthy, delicious drinks with ancient tea. The tagline is kind of ancient tea, modern drinks. We think tea is the perfect afternoon drink, and we think that tea in America has kind of been, it's given the short end of the stick. It's, you know, if you go to a cafe and you order tea, they basically just give you a bag with some hot water.
Right.
And it just does tea such an injustice. So in China, tea is one of the most popular drinks. It was invented there. They've been perfecting tea for over 5,000 years. And all we want to do is bring some of those amazing flavors over here, make fun, simple, modern drinks with them, and let people try them.
That's a really interesting point. I love tea, and I guess I've just been kind of the green tea with lemon and honey.
That's the thing. That's what most people are.
Yeah.
You know, most people, when they think about tea, they think black, green. Maybe if they're educated more in tea, they know oolong. Maybe they're into matcha. But within those categories, there's thousands of different varieties. And when I say China's been perfecting it, they've been crossbreeding, selectively breeding tea for thousands and thousands of years. So the flavors that they have over there are wildly different than anything here in America.
Okay, how do you do this here? Because I know there is a lot of effort on your part. You've got this trailer for Joy Tea, and it's mobile. We'll talk about that more in a second. But in terms of the preparation, there's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so prepping the tea is a lot of work. Basically, we steep the tea. We have a very precise method that we've developed. Every tea requires different steeping temperatures, times, and preparation methods to get the best flavor. So we dial all that in, we prepare the tea, and then we have this awesome kegerator system here. And if I open this up, you'll see we got 1/6 kegs in there, tapped with nitrogen. So that's really important because we're purging the oxygen out of the environment. That keeps the tea fresh, and then when you drink it and then you expose it to oxygen, you let it breathe and you get some more of those flavors.
That's amazing, and I gotta be honest, I never thought about it. It's so detailed, like you have been, obviously, but really when I drink this tea that I'm currently sipping on here, you're right, it's like you get a lot of the nuance, which I feel like usually I just don't even realize.
It's very subtle.
I realize it with this.
Yeah, like Americans typically are very, you know, coffee's big here. And so we're very accustomed to these big, bold, combative flavors. Tea is the exact opposite. Tea is subtle, harmonious. These are flavors that you want to work together, that you don't want to overpower one another. So we're kind of like the antithesis to coffee in almost every respect. Our products are going to wake you up without making you feel jittery or anxious. Tea is one of the only proven drinks to lower cortisol. So our flavors, you know, unlike coffee that's bold and beautiful, ours are more subtle, nuanced, and harmonious. So we have a lot more freedom to make fun things like this grapefruit tea or future flavors coming up.
When you thought about doing this, why did you do it? I mean, obviously you love tea, but you saw that there is this kind of void. You do love tea.
It's my life.
you love it. But why would you do this? Because there is a void. We love coffee here in this country. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And I think tea can sometimes be kind of like second fiddle.
Yeah.
So why did you want to do this?
Yeah, so we'll talk about that coffee thing first. I don't hate coffee. I've drank coffee for a long time. But I think tea should play a bigger role in Americans' drink habits. Tea is the perfect afternoon drink. You'll never, at 3 p.m., you'll never go around and say, hey, I need a double shot espresso. It's kind of ridiculous.
Right.
But having a tea in the afternoon is the perfect way to kind of wind down your day, keep you energized, and keep you feeling great. The reason I'm doing this is because, I love tea. You know, I'm ethnically Chinese, so it's been very it's very culturally important to me. But I just think more people should drink more tea. They'd benefit from it. And the flavors are just so wonderful. I'm a sharer. I like sharing stuff. And I just want to share these flavors with more people. It's really, it brings me a lot of joy, which is kind of why, you know, it brings it to the name. But it's kind of a selfish thing. I just love sharing tea with people.
I'm glad you're doing it because you are helping out a lot of people. Hold on, you've got some customers here. You want to go ahead, help them. Let's help them. Yeah. Let's see what they want.
How are you guys? Is this your first time?
Yeah.
Give this a smell really quick because the aroma is phenomenal. All right, you guys are all set. Do you want to do cash or card? You're welcome.
All right, thanks.
So you are a tea expert here, clearly. You have been working in tea. What's your background? How do you know so much about tea?
Oh my God, I'm just obsessed. I think it's the best drink in the world. So I do a lot of research. I talk to a lot of people. I didn't start knowing this much. I actually lean a lot on farmers and purveyors of tea. I kind of see myself as an aggregator of knowledge. I'm not really an expert. I find all the important information and I package it up for our customers.
So Joy Tea right now, this is a trailer.
Yep.
And again, I want to emphasize, this is a very nice, new, clean kind of trailer. It's very cool and it's portable. So what's the idea here with the business model? You're going around Oak Park and River Forest primarily. What's the goal here?
So the vision is to be the Starbucks of tea. We think when people think coffee in America, they typically think Starbucks or Dunkin'. But when you say tea, it's kind of a, what is it? Like if I asked you, think about tea, think about a brand.
Oh man, I don't know. Yeah, I couldn't tell you.
It's highly fragmented. So, right. You know, so when you think about tea, we want you to think Joy. So we want to be the Starbucks of tea. We want to bring all these amazing teas to people and open up stores and just be available, convenient, create high quality products.
So the idea here is, even though you're mobile, which I think is cool because you could go to different areas and kind of be where people are.
This is only the start, right?
It's the start. So you want to open up a store.
The trailer, the great thing about the mobile trailer is that we get to go to other people. And so we get to tell our story better than, you know, getting people to come to us. You know, we get to go to them, share our story, and actually share the product and the experience with people real time.
That's incredible. So the idea here is to keep the trailer going, get a store, but to be the Starbucks of tea. How have people been receiving this? Because you haven't been doing this for a terribly long time, right? So what's it been like, the response?
Oh, it's been overwhelming, really phenomenal. So when I first started, I was a little bit hesitant because we're introducing some newer flavor profiles to people. But I mean, so the thing I'm really focused on is making a product that makes people say, wow. This is a thesis I've had for a long time. If you can make someone say, wow, they're going to remember you. And so when we crafted our products, we really wanted to make sure that on your first sip, you had a physical reaction, a wow, a whoa, a oh my God. And yeah, so the reaction has been, wow, whoa, oh my God, that's phenomenal. Yeah, and so I think we're doing the right thing. I think we're on the right track. We're going to keep doing that. We're going to keep trying to make teas that make you say, wow. And you'll see me doing this forever.
I love your enthusiasm. I love the product. It's really, really good. So if we are wanting to know more about Joy Tea, to go online, what's the best thing we can do here?
Definitely follow us at Joy Tea USA on Instagram. We'll have a website soon, but the Instagram is the best way to keep updated. And then just stop by and say hello and try some tea, and we'll see what you think.
Yeah, that's how I found you on Instagram, and I'm just going to have some more of this. This is, what's it called again? The jasmine?
The grapefruit jasmine green tea.
Hold on.
Perfect for summer.
Oh, so good. It really is good. All right, so Joy Tea USA on Instagram. That's where we can find Joy Tea. We should all check it out. And then you right now have a schedule, so you're not every day of the week you're in a different place around Oak Park and River Forest, and that's kind of the schedule for now, right?
Yeah, so we got some stalkers. We got people that follow us around. So yeah, we're mobile, but we're mobile, you know, in certain spots. So we want people to build a ritual. We want them to come back. And so you'll be able to follow our schedule, see where we are, and integrate this into your day.
I love it. It's a great story, a great small business story. Max Blessin, the founder and CEO of Joy Tea. talking to us today in River Forest on Lake Street as the cars whiz by us outside of Keystone Park. Good luck with everything. What you're doing tastes great, and I'm excited to see what happens in the future.
Thank you so much. Thanks for coming by.
And that just about does it. Outside the Loop, show number 1003 is done. I say thank you so much for listening to the show today. And really, this entire year, the year that was 2025, and the years prior, if you were a super fan listening for a while, I really appreciate you. And thank you so much for sticking with the show. I'm excited for 2026 and what's on the horizon here. And, you know, it was a really incredible 2025. Kind of a roller coaster, I feel like, but we got the 1,000th episode in just a few weeks ago during 2025, and that was an amazing milestone, so I'm excited to get this going again in 2026. Happy New Year! Thanks, of course, to Bob Ferguson for all of his engineering help in the WGN Radio studio. I will talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.